the coat to their father. So the pasuk says, "Yishalchut ktonat tapasim v'yaviu al aviyam." They take the goat, v'yaviu al aviyam, and they bring to their forefathers. V'yomru zot matzanu, and they say, "Thus we have found." Hakerna, do you recognize this garment? They say to their father, "Haktonet binchahi imla." Do you recognize this garment? They say to their dad, "Is that your son's garment?" Vayakira, and he recognizes it. Yes, indeed, this is the garment that I gave Yosef. Okay, now, so the way that the brothers present the garment to their dad is through the words hakerna. Do you recognize? And they show him a garment. Okay, now already we're seeing a little bit of a shkacha process here. Because when else have we been presented with a garment, with clothing specifically, with not just any clothing, but a coat, but not just any coat, a goat's coat, by Yosef, but before Yosef?
Oh, is this one?
Who else had seen in his life, had dealt with...
like David and Joel?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Earlier. Before David.
A coat.
Before Yosef.
Yaakov.
Yaakov himself. When did he, remember he dressed himself with the coat of Esau.
Oh, like it was Nimrod's coat.
And
no?
He,
it was Adam.
According to the Midrash, it was Nimrod and Adam, but according to the Simple Pshat, it was a goat's coat. Okay. He wore a goat's coat, and now he's being presented with the exact same Shkacha Pratis, but in a sad way, the exact same goat's coat. And I imagine a tzaddik like Yaakov must have been thinking to himself, wow, this is not Stam. This is maybe a punishment from Hashem. This is Hashkacha Pratis. It can't be a coincidence that exactly the way that I tricked my brother is now the way that I'm being tricked. Or did he know he was being tricked? We don't know, but being hurt. Okay, so that's part one of the Hashkacha Pratis. But it gets even wilder and crazier. Because now we're going to flash forward to chapter 38. Yes?
Sorry, this is like really off topic. I got distracted because I saw the appendix. I'll be back at the time now. Abraham had another wife other than Hagar and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
At the end,
yes.
It says like months of this.
Keturah.
And have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 kids.
Yes, all of this is in the Bible. Has nothing to do with our topic, but indeed.
Isn't Keturah the same person as Hagar?
According to the Midrash, it was the same. Rashi says it was the same person. Exactly.
Well, then she had like 15 kids.
And she had a lot of kids, correct. This is completely true and completely irrelevant to what we're talking about. So now let's move to Tamar. Okay, the story with Tamar. Chapter 38, verse 25. So, as I'm sure you guys remember, Tamar has been in this really tough situation. The two children of Yehuda have died, and Yehuda has promised that a third child that is going to take through the Yibum, so to speak, and take the place and have the name of his lost child continue. But then he conveniently forgets to give the child to Tamar. Perhaps he suspects that Tamar is really the cause of like the curse. And now Tamar has been with Yehuda and she's been caught. And they're going to burn her because she had a relationship with a man when she was kind of still somewhat meant to be married to the next child of Yehuda. So this is considered adultery in biblical times, apparently, and she's about to get burnt at the stake. Yeah.
Even if it wasn't Tamar, isn't what Yehuda did still wrong? Like,
Certainly nowadays, according to Jewish law, it would be very much a sin to sleep with a prostitute. Even back then, I imagine that it was not considered a good thing to do. After all, it does say that Yehuda was hurad. He went down. And Rashi says he didn't just go down, you know, physically, but spiritually. He was after the sin of selling Yosef. It seems like he was already an outcast from the brothers. The brothers realized that he was the leader and they led them astray. And so it does seem like he's not on the good path at this point. And yes, I wouldn't recommend relationships with prostitutes personally. But in any case, just beside the point, the point is the following. How does Tamar choose to word when she presents Yehuda with the petil and the chtomet, with the staff and the proof that this man has sinned. What does he say? Hakerna. Do you recognize this staff and this signet ring? Now, have we heard this phrase before, Hakerna? Who has said this phrase? Just a moment ago. Well, for them, for us, it's a moment ago, but Yehuda has used this exact phraseology.
Oh, now it's being turned on.
And now, he, exactly what he used to trick his father, is being presented with that exact same word. And now, Yehuda has this beautiful choice that we all have to decide every single day. Are we going to see the messages that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is presenting us? Are we going to recognize that I have an opportunity to own up for my mistakes, to do tshuva, to say, I sinned, I slept with Tamar, and I refused to give her my children, and I am to blame, and she should not be burned at the stake? Or would he do what he could have easily done and just said, kill her. You know, he didn't want to be embarrassed in public.
Why would she have been burned? Because she was married to someone?
I can, because she, in those days, until you've been yibumified, until you've taken a new husband, you're as if still in a relationship with a dead one, and now you're sleeping, you slept with somebody else. Besides the fact that another option of why she's going to be burnt is just because she's an extramarital relationship, and maybe that had death penalty back then. We don't know. Or because maybe she's son of a righteous person, the judge, Yehuda, who knows why. But the point here is you see the phraseology. You miss this when you read the English. You miss the whole thing. But in the Hebrew, you understand the Ashkacha Pratis that's weaving through the text, where Hashem is arranging it so exactly the right phrase is told to Yehuda, giving him the opportunity to own up for his action and recognize Ashkacha, or to just, you know, do what his Yetzer Hara says. So to me, I think this is maybe the most beautiful example of Ashkacha in the Torah, because it's a choice that Yehuda has to ask himself at the end of the day. Am I going to recognize Hashem's presence in my life, or I'm going to run away from it? And we all have to make, you can hear shear from here till Mashiach, but that doesn't mean you're going to act upon that inner knowledge that we have when we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our lives. So I just wanted to kind of throw that in as one last biblical story. And our last 20 minutes, 18 minutes of class or so, I wanted to just throw a few more practical lessons that we could glean. Most of our class has been, very textual based and a lot of source sheets. Today I just want to throw some lamaisa. What are some nice practical ideas? And we'll throw in some stories too of new, what do we take out of Hashkacha, out of now our newfound, deeper understanding of God's divine providence in our lives. Yeah? Okay, so lesson number one is when we're going through hard situations, whether we're going through the little situations, the little times when I forgot my knapsack at the Kotel Tunnels and I have to run back, or my cheese sandwich didn't turn out to be the credit card and all that, or every single day we have endless opportunities of little annoying things that happen to us. So now that we're so confident that everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do we do? What's the lemaisa? What do we do when we are experiencing that credit card malfunction? So what do you guys say? What are we supposed to do?
Say thank you, Hashem.
Exactly. You say thank you, Hashem.
That's what I said when I walked out. I was like, Hashem, you're the coolest person ever. I got a free sandwich.
Amazing. But the key is to say it even before. Even before the happy ending. Even, when the luggage is still under the bus. Because it's very easy to say thank you, Hashem, and it's beautiful to say thank you, Hashem, when we have a happy ending. But the real, what separates the boys from the men, the girls from the women, is when you're able to say, first of all, think it. Second of all, say it. Because saying it makes it more real. Say thank you, Hashem. And third of all, this is hard, mean it. Okay, now, meaning it is not always easy because we don't, especially when it's a harder annoyance, not just a small thing, it's a really annoying thing that happens to us. We don't naturally feel, yay, I'm excited. But that's the beauty of amuna. Amuna is like the hitamin. What does hitamin mean in Hebrew?
It's to be strong.
It means to believe, but it actually means to practice. Okay, because amuna, it's not something that you heard Ishir once in Shana Aleph from Rav Kalman, and then you're good for it, and then you go to Kali, you're good. No. Amuna is a muscle that you practice every single day. You mean stop doing push-ups, you get weaker. You stop running, it doesn't matter how many shears you heard. If you didn't hear Ashir today, if you didn't practice, you didn't do it, he devoted to this today and practice Emuna, is gone. Right? It's going. You're either going up or going down. So how do we get to a place of actually meaning Hashkacha Pratis? We work on it. We work on ourselves. We remind ourselves. We talk to Hashem. You can even do the following on the way here. You know, I have usually 3 million things to say. Usually the last lesson that I hear as I'm biking here is what I actually give over to you guys. So I heard the following idea from the Shomer Emunim. It's a beautiful sefer. He writes that after something bad happens, you should say, Hashem, listen, Hashem, I know this bad thing that happened to me is from you, and I accept it, and I'm thankful for it. But I should figure out what sin I did that caused me to lose my knapsack or have my credit card malfunction or lose my luggage. But honestly, Hashem, I don't really know. It's hard for me to figure out what's the... Sometimes we really know. You know, sometimes we have an inkling, right? Sometimes, well, my scooter got stolen. I wasn't so careful on my scooter. I made a chil Hashem. I put A and B together, and I can kind of figure out what my sin is. Most of the time, we don't really know. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. We never really know. But sometimes we just say, Hashem, I don't really know, but you know. So please count this as a kapara. Please count this as a kapara, because I trust you that it's a kapara, and that works. They say, who's they? The Arizal writes that the greatest zechut in the world is to be embarrassed. Is when you get embarrassed, if we knew what we were achieving in Shemaim, how much we're getting cleansed through the heavenly laundry, when we get embarrassed by someone else, unbelievable. We would run to get embarrassed. We run. That's what he writes. But the thing is, that only achieves the true atonement when we recognize that it's all from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is something Rabbi Nachman Mibrastov talks about all the time. That the act of recognition is what is mamtik the dinim, is what sweetens the judgments. So, you know, you have to go through that hard work of saying, I know that this is hard. And almost, I wouldn't look to get embarrassed, but when it happens, so like, yes, you know, in your head, you'd be like, ding, 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 you know?
You shouldn't be upset.
I think I told my other, maybe I told you guys the story. So I recently, literally 5.5 months ago, so it was on the day my baby was born, and you know the story? I ran to the kotel, and my wife was still in the hospital, and I was in a great mood. I just wanted to celebrate, so I went to the kotel, and I bought a bunch of like l'chaims and food and all sorts of stuff. And I ran on like Tuesday, and I went to the first minyan I could daven with. It was all good, and right at the end of minyan, and there's also a chassan there, and so it was even more simcha. And I've davened at the kotel the last 15 years, so I know a lot of times people have kiddushes and things like that, or all the time. So I said, Chevra, I'm so happy, I'm 36 years old, I just had my first baby, my wife's 38, it was a big yeshua, and I really want to make a l'chaim, something like that. And this guy gets up there, the chazan, and he's like, no, absolutely not, you can't make, it's against the rules, you can't make a l'chaim at the kotel, you can't eat here, it's a makes a mess. I'm like, I work here, I'm telling you, I'll clean the place up, don't worry, it's fine. You're allowed to. It's a base matters. It's fine. He's like, no, absolutely not. I'm like, listen, I'll go to that table, okay? You can have your shtender. Like, we're going to go over there. He's like, no, I'm going to tell you. He starts going crazy.
You work there, literally.
And I'm just like, wow. I did not see that coming. I don't know what to do. And I was like genuinely embarrassed. I'm like, okay. And like, it just killed the vibe. Like, everyone just ran away. It was just intense. They just came for regular chakras. And I walked away, and I was like, the only thing I could think of was like, okay, you guys should ask me for a bracha, because like it's a big thing when somebody gets embarrassed.
I
should
ask people when they're embarrassed for brachas.
I gave the chassan a bracha, and he gave me back a bracha. We went to the back. We had a little bit of a l'chaim, but it was like really like awkward. And that was that. But if I would have been giving this year after this year, maybe I would have had even more moon. I would have realized that it's, wow, amazing. What is chus? I actually see that guy pretty much every day, 3 times a day. And I should go over to him and mom just give him a big hug. I say, thank you so much.
I yell at you. I wouldn't do that.
He probably would yell at me, so maybe I shouldn't. But
but then you'd get more embarrassed.
It's true. I'm not sure if it works like that. If you purposefully bring yourself into the situation, I don't know. I don't know how it works. But definitely, and again, as a human being, I'm not telling you it's easy for me. I'm not telling you that I see that guy. I just love that guy with all my heart. But if I were a true Amuna, and that's something I have to work on every single day, then I would. I would really feel, wow, what is chus? And, you know, the more we learn about Amuna, we talk about Hashgacha Pratis, then the more chizuk we give ourselves to really, really feel that. I'll tell a quick story that I also heard about this. So there was a man who, exactly like this, he listened to a shir, and he got embarrassed in public. And someone sent him something really nasty. And his natural reaction would be send something nasty back. But he recognized the opportunity. So he went into his room and just worked. He talked to Hashem and he worked and worked and worked on himself until he got to the point where he could genuinely say to Hashem, okay, I accept it. Thank you so much, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all for the best. And he had this searing pain that had gone from his foot until his knee. And as soon as he accepted it, the pain just went away. Just went away.
He had it for a while.
He had it for a long time, and it just went away. Yeah. So apparently that searing pain was some sort of kapara. But he achieved the same kapara just by recognizing that it's all from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. I heard a similar story where there was a man, a little differently, but there was a man who went to the doctor, went to the hospital, and he was going to have to amputate one of his... I don't think they amputate, but they're going to have to do surgery. He wouldn't have usage for one of his ears, I believe. And he was really sad. And he went around the hospital looking at all the other people who were sick and thanking Hashem. Well, thank God I have an arm. Thank God I have a nose. Thank God I have this. Thank God I have that. And after doing this for a few hours, he came back to the doctor. The doctor did another examination and they didn't need a surgery anymore. It was solved. It was all good. So there's a whole book I have at home. It's called Thank Hashem and See Salvations. So it's all about this principle, which is something Rabbi Nachman talks a lot about, of dafka, when you have a hard situation, you know, to use that as an opportunity to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And look, sometimes you're going to see these crazy miracle stories like this. Probably most of the time you won't. Most, you know, because we live in the world of Teva, and we don't always see open miracles. But the miracle is our attitude. Is we'll be able to accept the challenging thing that's going to happen in a totally different light, and we'll be much more calm and serene, knowing that it's all from Hashem. And maybe eventually, not maybe, for sure, eventually, either in this world or perhaps in the next world, we'll understand exactly why we needed to go through that hard yisurim situation. So basically, in other words, practical takeaway. From Hashgacha Pratis number one is always thank Hashem for the Yisurim, for the small ones and the big ones. A lot are easier for the small ones, but even for the big ones, they're big tzaddikim, and we should be big tzaddikim and tzaddikot, who are able to thank Hashem even for the hard challenges in our life, and we'll be able to mitaken them. Of course, if the Gemara also says that you should be mefash fesh v'masecha, if you can try to figure out, why is this Yisurim coming to me? Did I do a particular sin that's related to this and that? Then that's even better, right?
Yeah,
if you can actually figure it out. But if we can't figure it out, or if you can, certainly being thanking Hashem is tikkun number one. Okay. Practical takeaway number two is always davening. Always davening. Because if we truly believe that everything is based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we need to do mitzvahs. And tefillah is the key mitzvah in order to have us have success in life, which is why we started our class davening. Right? We didn't just walk in and say, oh, let's have class. We said, Hashem, please let this class really penetrate our hearts, because we recognize that there's nothing that can be achieved without tefillah. So I want a quick story on that. Mm-hmm. I heard this also today as I was cleaning, taking boxes apart in my apartment. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts.
Mm, yeah.
We moved, and now I'm unboxing things.
What?
So I'm listening to a lot of...
Opposite.
Yeah, sorry. I have a lot of extra boxes if you want. So here's a great, great story. So a few years back, and there was the founding of the state of Israel, and they're trying to figure out how this country is going to run. You know, there's religious people, there's secular people, it's complicated. And a law is being passed in the Knesset where they wanted to legalize abortion. Okay?
Where was that?
This is in the state of Israel.
We learned this story with abortion.
You heard it. Okay, very good.
I don't know if everyone was there.
Okay, so I'll tell you.
He just told us when we went to him.
Okay, so I'll tell you the 1 minute version because
it's a great story.
It's a great story. But kids, I'll tell you the 1 minute story. Basically, so Rav Aryeh Levine's son, Yitzchak Levine, and Rabbi Stern were sent in as rabbis to plead before Shmuel Tamir, the head judge of the Knesset. Please don't legalize abortion. Of course, there are certain situations when abortion is permitted, but in general, just willy nilly, it's against Jewish law, and he wanted to convince him not to. Now it is legal, correct? But back then it wasn't. So before they walk in, Levine goes and says, "Let's daven." Say a lot of Tehillim, davening their hearts out. Maybe they'll be able to sway this judge and save many, many Jewish lives. They go in there, and Levine tells a little story about how once there was a woman who came before Rav Aryeh Levine, and she had a question. You see, she came from a religious background. She wasn't religious anymore. Her husband was secular, and her husband wanted her to get an abortion. It was going to war. It wasn't the right time. And she didn't really care, but she wasn't sure what to do. And Rav Aryeh Levine just started crying for 20 minutes, crying until even the man was like, okay, we won't get the abortion. We'll get the abortion. So who is that boy who was born? Shmuel Tamir. And Shmuel Tamir says, what? And he calls up his mom, and it's a true story, and they don't pat. And for at least a few more years, abortion is still illegal in the state of Israel. So Rav Stern comes up to Rav Levine and says, wait a second. If you had that story that whole time, why do we have to daven so much? You know, I could learn my daf yomi. Like, well, of course you're going to convince the guy. And Rav Levine says, no matter what, nothing happens without tefillah. Nothing happens without tefillah. You could be 100% sure that something's going to succeed, and dafka, because of your overconfidence, boom. Mamash, I've seen this in my own life. I saw this with my own life. I've seen it even this particular year. That when I get a little overconfident, I feel like, everything's easy. You don't daven, then the shkacha leaves you, and as soon as you reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you see the shkacha. Always. Sometimes you daven and Hashem says no. But you'll feel like, okay, Hashem's saying he heard my request and he said no, and you're much more able to accept it. But before anything of that thing we do in life, Rabbi Nachman says, before you nail a hammer in the wall, daven. Okay, if you can remember. Daven before every single
thing. Does it have to be like siddur davening?
No, hefech. It shouldn't be siddur davening. It's hitzbodedus.
Okay.
It should be just talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your own words, in your own language. Just make it real. Be as real as possible, and you'll see Yeshua's, and B, you'll feel Hashem's presence in your life. Okay. Last and final takeaway, Bezrat Hashem, this little class is really where we started. Remember the first class, and I started with my Hashkacha Pratah story? Remember I told you how I was running, and I opened up this, I read a book about Hashkacha Pratah, and I see in my email Hashkacha Pratah. That's the amazing thing about Hashkacha Pratah. That's why I was such a schus to be able to teach this class for you girls, because it allows me to be constantly thinking about Hashkacha Pratah. I'm always looking for the best story, and I'm thinking about Hashkacha Pratah. And when I think about Hashkacha Pratah, I see Hashkacha Pratah in my life. So the more that we talk about Hashkacha Pratah and think about Hashkacha Pratah, the more Hashem actually sends Hashkacha Pratah in our life. The more we it's in our radar screen, and the more we see it, as the Baal Shem Tov writes, Hashem Tzilcha. We say this in Tehillim. Hashem is your shadow. Exactly the way we treat Hashem, that's the way we're going to see it. So when we're constantly talking about Hashem's divine providence, and Hashem's going to constantly show us opportunities, He's going to reveal us His presence, it's about Hashem. And we should be zeiche, please God, to constantly see Hashem's presence in our lives.